All right, we'll bring the meeting to order. Welcome everybody to this kind of unusual meeting of an interim meeting committee, but I want you to know that we did extend the invitation to the appropriations committees to hear this report as well. So some are in attendance and will be non-voting, but will be able to ask questions since they're going to be seeing the budget anyway. So with that, we'll start by taking roll.
Chairman Ruby.
Here.
Representative Anderson. Representative Bow.
Here.
Representative Hattelstad.
Here.
Representative Kempinick.
Here.
Representative Kreit.
Here.
Representative Maragos.
Here.
Representative Mock. Representative Munson.
Here.
Representative Pollard.
Aye.
Representative Scarpo.
Here.
Senator Wanzek. Senator Heckman.
Here.
Senator Klein.
Here.
Senator Lee.
Here.
All right, we have a quorum. Could we get a motion on the minutes? Okay, we have a motion by Representative Kempinick, second by Representative Maragos. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. All right, that motion carries. All right, let's get started. Who's the first presenter?
Afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. With me is, I'm going to have Charles Turley from KPMG present the report. Also here is Andy Gottschuk, who's the partner on the engagement. The LAFRC asked us to bid this audit out at their June meeting. We issued an RFP in July. The due dates for that were the end of August, and we awarded the audit to KPMG. They're an international accounting firm, so I'll turn it over to Charles Turley with that.
Okay. Welcome.
Good afternoon. Welcome. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'd like to go over our report. My name is Charles Turley, like Gordy stated. I'd like to talk about the background, kind of our objectives, our scope, go over our approach, and then go into our findings. KPMG was engaged by the state auditor and the water commission to conduct a performance audit, basically to provide an assessment of the industrial water use monitoring reporting policies and procedures employed by the Water Appropriations Division. Our objective was broken up into six elements that were defined in our RFP. Each element is summarized on page 3 of the report. Element 1 talks about the evaluation of the policies and procedures to assess compliance with the laws and regulations. Element 2 assesses the industrial use water and well monitoring processes to assess compliance again with laws and regulations. Element 3 was to evaluate monitoring processes of temporary industrial water use permits issued in lieu of irrigation to assess compliance. Element 4 was to analyze the monitoring policies and procedures utilized to manage temporary water use. Element 5 was to review procedures used to enforce rules and regulations regarding imposition of fines and penalties. And then element 6 was overall to evaluate the monitoring and reporting processes to assess effectiveness. Our scope period for this review was calendar years 2010, 2011, and the first 6 months of 2012. Now I'd like to go to page 7. Page 7, our section 1 of our report gives an overview of the Water Appropriations Division. Basically, the Water Appropriations Division is a component of the state engineer, and they have roughly seven designated responsibilities. For purposes of this review, we were really focused on the monitoring water resources and the reporting aspect of that. The department structure as of October 2012 had 23 staff members to include hydrologists, special investigations, management, and then different water permit type professionals. On page 8, what we did here was we provided an overview of some of the water use and hydraulic monitoring programs to give you some perspective on what goes on at the Water Appropriations Division. Basically, they manage water use and hydraulic monitoring programs. Again, the scope of this review was focused on the industrial use water permit type. On page 9, we have some, section 2 of our report goes over some process overviews at a high level. To understand the permit and the reporting and monitoring protocols, we had to get a good understanding of the processes in place. Here we list out the permit processing overview. The actual permit process wasn't part of our scope, but we had to gain an understanding of, you know, permit conditions and how a permit holder obtains a permit to understand the reporting and the monitoring piece. Based off of what type of water permit that you apply for, that would dictate what kind of reporting and monitoring protocols you had to adhere to. So basically, this section just goes over the permitting process. Then on page 10, we start providing some more detail around monitoring and reporting, the overviews. So for conditional perfecting industrial use water permits, we go over kind of what the reporting protocols or the monitoring protocols are here. Again, based off of what type of permit you get, there's a meter requirement, or there's a monthly or annual reporting requirement. On page 13, we give an overview of the regulation enforcement process. You know, per the Century Code, you know, the state engineer has the authority to enact penalties against individuals that violate water laws, use rules, or policies. Here we provide an overview of kind of what that authority states. On page 14, we provide an overview of the monitoring of the aquifer levels process here. The aquifers are the source, a source for water users to withdraw water. So this was part of our scope to make sure that, one, from a reporting and monitoring standpoint, were there any risk to depletion of these resources. On page 17, section 3, we go over our auditing process. And basically, at a high level, to conduct this performance audit, we conducted interviews with multiple individuals from the Water Appropriations Division. We did a documentation review where we looked at, again, permits, different types of policies, procedures, things like that. We did some real-time observations where we went on a site visit with one of the resources, and we went out and we observed them monitor wells and go to reading meters at water depots and things like that. We conducted some testing around the annual use forms and the reporting forms to see if they were in compliance with the policies and procedures. We did a benchmarking analysis where we looked at three other states to see if their protocols around reporting and monitor were in line or similar to North Dakota. And then we conducted an analysis where we came up with the results indicated in this report.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Scarborough.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe Mr.
Turley.
Turley?
Yes, sir.
I believe you're about to go into recommendations.
Yes, sir.
Before we do that, I just, if you don't mind, Mr. Chairman, a couple questions.
Sure.
On the comparison to other states.
Yes.
In that analysis, did you, I'm going to make an assumption and you tell me whether it's correct or not, but I would suggest that there's probably not another state that has a similar situation with regard to industrial sales of water that you were able to compare to. Is that a fairly accurate statement with the volume or a similar situation?
I would say that's an accurate statement.
Okay. And then with regard to, on page 14, and I did have a little time to read through some of this. So
okay.
There's a statement that says a division also contracts with individuals who monitor specific wells. I wasn't aware of that, and I wondered if you could comment on it. Some of us serve on both this committee and on our Appropriations Committee, and this subsection that we serve on, some of us. are working with this budget right now. So it would be enlightening for us if you could comment on any contract work that you're aware of through your work that the Water Commission has.
Okay, so our understanding is that for monitoring of the aquifer levels, the Water Appropriations Division has a protocol where they actually go out, and they have a schedule, and they go out and they test and they document it. But our understanding from interviews was that they also use contractors to paint, I guess there's a couple factors that go into it, maybe location or something like that. But our understanding is there are a number, I don't know what the exact number is, so I don't want to, but that contractors are used to assist in measuring observation wells.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, if I might,
continue.
One more.
Yep.
I would like to go back to page 4.
Page 4.
And the conclusion that you have written on the bottom, Water Appropriations Division executes reporting and monitoring practices to adhere to laws, regulations, and policies. However, these practices do not appear to be formally documented and are primarily manual in nature. Can you comment about, on a scale of 1 to 10, if 10 was best practice, where would you rate the Water Commission's practices on that scale?
Sure thing. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I would rate, from a practice standpoint, I would say that 8. But as far as what is formally documented, so what we identified was that we understand, or we were able to see that the Water Appropriations Division resources, they know how to do their job, that they know what needs to be done, and they're very good at their job. However, that's not necessarily reflected in documented policies and procedures. Therefore, there may be inconsistencies in how some things are done in one part of the state versus the other part of the state, or one hydrologist for another hydrologist. So I think the issue that we've identified was not really related to practice, but it was more related to the documentation of the policies and procedures to help ensure that there's consistencies in those practices.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. All right, continue.
All right. So we can go to the findings and recommendations that are located on page, we'll start off on page 21. And what I'd like to do is kind of go over some key findings and observations. If there's any questions, Mr. Chairman, please stop me at any point and let me know. The first observation I'd like to go over is finding 1.1, which kind of reflects what we just discussed around formal policies and procedures not being adequately documented. So again, the Water Appropriation Division, they have various governance documents to include the code, the administrative code, the other codes, policies and procedures, things of that nature. They have some informal or some kind of desk level procedures that they have to demonstrate activities that they conduct. However, what we saw was there wasn't a consistent format, there wasn't a consistent application, or from a documentation standpoint, related to policies and procedures, that not every function or key function may not have been documented. So our recommendation here really is to kind of devise a standard format around policies and procedures, disseminate them to the employees to help reduce the risk that inconsistent practices are adhered to in the field, to have some consistency, to retain institutional knowledge if there's ever a scenario where people leave the organization through retirement or things like that. And we think that documenting policies and procedures would help gain some efficiencies and some consistency around operations. And the Water Appropriations response that they agree with that recommendation as well.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Kempling.
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Tooley, would this, would the reason they weren't doing it, the certain amount of flexibility, or would this, would they still have flexibility in how they do things? Would they have to make them so specific that it'd take anything away from, you know, if they, or would it be a fairly broad statement or how would you envision that rolling out?
Typically, what we see that the policies and procedures, there will be some flexibility. It's really a basis, a foundation to kind of streamline protocols, but there could be references in there around, you know, discretionary things like that. So it provides a template or a format that if someone new walked into the area, that they could kind of read these policies and procedures and get a good understanding of how to execute a certain function. But they would, they should have some flexibility in them, but it should be addressed how much flexibility or how much discretion is given to someone before an action is taken out.
Thank you.
Continue.
Thank you. The next observation or finding we'd like to look at is 1.2 on page 24. This observation is around the annual use form submission date. The annual use form is a reporting tool used that permit holders or water users use to report their usage on an annual basis. What we observed were a couple things. One, the code states that there's a deadline date that the form should be submitted. Due to some operational areas at the Water Appropriations Division, the response date was pushed back approximately a month. We noted that as being non-compliant with the code. Again, the rationale behind that was due to the volume of forms that they receive. There's a huge administrative burden, and allowing that extra time gave them more time to address that administrative burden. Our recommendation here is to, one, enforce the code, and if there's challenges with meeting that deadline, seek some kind of legislative change to reallocate the date to allow for effective processing of the AUFs. The other recommendation was around, this is a very manual process at the time, around leveraging technology to have some kind of electronic submission of the forms to help reduce some of the administrative burden. Again, the Water Appropriations Division agreed with this response, and they're looking into actually changing the date and implementing some kind of electronic submission for reporting.
Chairman?
Yeah, Representative Scarpa.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Considering the volume of business that's being done and the dollar values of the product that's being sold, do you think an annual reporting system is sufficient to prevent or potentially give the commission enough forewarning of violations?
If I understand your question correct, is annual reporting sufficient? And the answer to that would be annual reporting is one of the reporting mechanisms. Again, depending on the permit type, there are different reporting. So there's monthly reporting and there's annual reporting. So for the water depots or some of the, I guess, higher risk kind of permit holders that use large volumes or water like that, they do report monthly as well. So there are monthly and annual reporting, and basically this was part of our review. We looked at both, but for this particular one, it was really around the annual report date.
Continue.
But the Century Code is set up to require annual reporting, and the monthly reporting is an administrative process then to go through?
So the Century Code is set up for annual reporting, and then there's additional protocols from the Water Appropriation Division to help ensure that they're getting information timely, and that's one of the where the monthly reporting was generated.
You'll get into that?
As far as the monthly reporting, we found some exceptions around a few things, but globally, from the monthly reporting, I think when we talk about reporting from a manual standpoint, we talk about it kind of holistically. This one was really about the code, but if there's specific questions around monthly reporting, we can discuss that. But as we go through it, there will be some things around monthly, but...
I'll wait.
Okay. So, we can go into finding 2.1 on page 27, and this finding is around the water use program is relying on permit holder self-reporting. So, this process is really dictated on permit holders self-reporting their information to the Water Appropriations Division, and then the Water Appropriations Division doing some kind of governance or oversight to validate that information. Again, this is a very manual process. On the condition here, we kind of list out what some of the reporting protocols are. So there's annual reporting, there's monthly reporting, there's field inspections, which are primarily spot checks done by the Water Appropriations Divisions to validate some of the reporting. And then there's the remote terminal metering devices, which was in a pilot phase, but this is another avenue for the meter readings to be electronically provided to the Water Appropriations Division electronically. So again, the recommendation here is to require the implementation of the remote terminal meter devices as appropriate. We think that this is a very good way for the Water Appropriations Division to get information accurately in real time, and then develop some policies and procedures around the inspections to help ensure there's consistency in application across the division. Again, the Water Appropriations Division agreed with this response. They were in the middle of the pilot phase of the remote telemetry metering devices during this review, and I believe a report on that conclusion was provided today, but we did not review that report as part of this project. On page 29, finding 2.2, annual use form processing is a manual in nature. Again, the annual use forms or the monthly reporting forms, they're all provided at this point in time, paper-based. It's a very manual process based on the number of forms that the Water Appropriations Division receives annually. Our recommendation here is to leverage technology to the extent possible by developing some kind of online data entry system where permit holders can submit their applications online so the Water Appropriations Division can receive that information. Again, this would require the Water Appropriations Division to still do some kind of verification or validation on the form, but this would free up some time as far as efficiencies and level of effort from resources going through paper-based forms. Again, the Water Appropriations Division agreed with this recommendation, and they're looking into developing an electronic submission tool to allow permit holders to provide these reports electronically.
Representative Striley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Hitting on the point you just made there, if I'm counting correctly, six of your recommendations are based on technology and electronic reporting. Was there any pushback from the division on, I don't recall that in the budget. I think it shouldn't be a pilot program. It should be an actual program and fund it. Being, you know, six of these recommendations are around technology. What are your thoughts on their willingness to implement technology quickly to solve some of these issues?
We didn't receive any pushback. They saw this as an opportunity. As we identified here, they currently maintain a pretty robust database where they put this information. So I think that the sense that we got was that from a technology standpoint, to the extent possible, they see this as a positive. And you're right, several of our recommendations do address technology. We think that increased use of technology would help them be more efficient when they can maybe divert some of that effort that's used processing or reviewing applications to field work or other things of that nature. But to kind of answer your question, we got no pushback from the Water Appropriations Division. They agree with all of the recommendations around technology, and they're looking to implement those in the most kind of a direct and cost-effective way.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Scarpa.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In reading through this, so I got the impression they were concerned about allowing a vendor, for lack of a better term in my head, to submit the information, you know, and then trust that information. Based on what I'm reading, I mean, I got the sense of there was kind of a lack of trust of someone entering information and having it go into their warehouse. From your perspective, are there not safeguards that could be put in place to ensure that the validity of that information could be verified before actually submitting it? I mean, aren't there mechanisms that allow for that type of oversight of inputted information from another entity?
Yes, there are safeguards. I think the concern here was that when a annual use form or any kind of form comes in, it goes through a review process. And then once it's reviewed by someone from the division, then that information is uploaded into the database. I think the concern here was that the information entered into the system would go directly into the database, which our recommendation would be there would still be some kind of gap between the information being received and going into the database, so there are appropriate reviews conducted as the manual form. But we think that if it's received electronically, you can there are some things on the form that may require some kind of calculation, or data fields may not be complete on the manual form, that you could kind of do electronically to reduce some of the effort. And then once that review process is done, then you can just kind of link that to your database and upload it that way. Then the other efficiency that we saw from that is currently the division scans the forms and uploads it in a database as a point of reference. If you're receiving that electronically, it kind of reduces one less step that you'd have to do in the scanning process could help from an efficiency standpoint.
And just
continue.
And that format or that electronic form is not available today. That's not a practice that they have available.
Currently, they are not accepting the forms online, is our understanding.
Continue.
The next finding that I'd like to discuss would be finding 4.2 on page 46. And again, all of our findings basically were around a couple key things. It was around formally documenting policies and procedures, and it was about manual processes, leveraging technology to help with the manual processes. And there's several instances throughout our findings where we identified areas where documenting policies or leveraging technologies could increase efficiencies, it could help streamline processes, and it could help potentially help the identification of potential water use violators in a timely, more effective manner. So on page 46, finding 4.2, variations in the consistency of water use data and the timeliness of reporting. Again, this goes back to being such a manual-based process, there's opportunity for human error. We identify some consistencies in the information that was provided on the form and kind of the timeliness of the reporting. Our recommendation here is to enforce the compliance with permit holders or water use users completing the form in its entirety, to communicate, do more outreach to educate the permit holders on the importance of completing the forms and understanding the forms, and then going back to implementing the online reporting tool, which could help by allowing pre-populated fields or fields that should be required to be completed before you can submit the form. Again, the Water Appropriations Division agreed with this recommendation. They're looking to leverage technology to the extent possible. They're looking to do more outreach, and they're looking to bring on an additional resource to help in the water in this area of to alleviate some of the burden on the current resource level. The next finding that I'd like to talk about is on page 54, finding 5.1. And this finding speaks to the fact around policies and procedures related to the establishment, imposition, and collection of penalties do not appear to be formally documented. This finding really addresses, like we stated earlier, that the Water Appropriation Division has the authority to assess and implement fines for water use violators. The code provides them the authority, but at the division level, we did not find evidence of any kind of formal document policy demonstrating kind of processes or protocols around that. We understand that when a water use violation is identified, there's several steps that occur. The first step is communication to the water permit holder, letting them know that this was identified. The next step is to attempt to resolve the issue either through reduction of future water use or other methods to that nature. If the violation cannot be resolved, then there's a administrative actions process that goes on that can occur, and then there's the ability to assess and impose a penalty and a fine. Again, our recommendation here is to formally document the policies and procedures. Currently, there's really one person responsible for the penalties and imposition of fines at the Water Commission, at the Water Appropriations Division. However, the whole division collectively helps identify and monitor things like that, but the process really not is funneled through one individual. So one of our recommendations is to kind of spread some of that responsibility out to the hydrologists and other resources to help that process. Again, the Water Appropriation Division agreed with this recommendation, and they're going to formally document policies and procedures around this area.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Scarpa.
Chairman, thank you. Mr. Curley, one of the reasons, and I'm the one that asked the committee, the Legislative Audit and Fiscal Review Committee, to authorize this, and it has to do with this particular issue. So if an entity, and City of Tioga, where I live, was guilty of a violation, and it was an egregious violation, I don't disagree with that. But if that entity had wanted to appeal that decision, what's their appeal process? What avenues do they have other than go talk to the state water commissioner? Can you give me an idea? I mean, if you can't have an appeals process, it's very difficult to dispute the violation. So I'm, you know, and I don't know how many there are. I think you said there were only seven, so it's not a big deal. But most of the time, we want a due process scenario for anybody that's had a penalty of some kind associated with their operation.
We looked at the process at a high level. We did some testing to see if there were any violations identified and what the subsequent consequence was. From an appeals process, I can't speak to that in detail. We didn't look at it in that much depth, like I stated. We understand that once the violation is identified, there's a process where the division goes out, or the hydrologist goes out and speaks to the permit owner to try to rectify it before it gets to some kind of administrative action, if that's feasible. But once it gets to that point, I can't speak to what the appeals process is at this time, we didn't look at that.
Thank you.
Representative Maragos.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't know if you know the answer to this, Mr. Curley, but when, is it currently the process where the Water Commission's auspices conduct the hearing, or do they turn it over to the Office of Administrative Hearings and have an administrative judge look, you know, handle all of the tenants of that violation?
Yeah, I think that it's turned over, but I'm not, we didn't look that deep, and I don't want to comment on it and it be inaccurate.
Thank you.
Okay. All right, I think there's somebody there has, in the audience has an answer to that. Do you want to do that now or get to it?
We'll wait.
Okay, we'll wait, yeah. Representative Delzer?
Mr. Chairman, sir, in your performance audit, did you check, you know, if these are self-reporting, how do they go out and catch the violation? How do is the way they do that? Did you check on that? Was that part of your performance audit?
Yes, sir. Basically, to help identify potential use violations, there's several areas. There's the reporting, obviously. There's a review of what's being reported. Is that in compliance with the permit holder? They do spot checks where their technicians are out in the field. Typically, what we identified was to kind of leverage or maximize opportunities. When well runs are being conducted, they would do spot checks. They would go out. They would document meter readings and make sure, try to align those with the reporting. They take in inquiries from the public, so if a citizen or a official at a sheriff or something like that sees something that's that they think is unordinary or out of the ordinary, they would communicate that to the Water Appropriations Division, and then they would do their due diligence and try to come to some conclusion on that. So there's several different ways that they try to identify potential use violations.
Engineer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If it's a point of sale and they're selling it, do they ever look at the books on the sales side compared to the reporting on the usage side?
I do not know the answer to that. I know that the meter readings are looked at, and the amount of water that's distributed from that water point or that meter, but from the sales side, we didn't dig that deep into the review.
Representative Scarpa.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question for Mr. Smith, but he doesn't need to get up. Let us do shake his head, okay? Is this the same firm that will do what I anticipate will be a follow-up sometime down the road? Does the contract provide for the normal follow-up audit by this entity? So you would anticipate that the state auditor's office might do that? Okay. Mr. Chairman, on the point that Representative Delzer is making, you know, I'm not one of those that much appreciate government either, but in the case of the Industrial Commission and the metering of oil sales, there are very stringent requirements on those meters. And those meters need to be sealed in place, and those seals cannot be broken. And if they're broken, someone's going to have to do a lot of explaining. And I'm going to suggest that that may not be the case with regard to metering of water. And with the amount of money that's involved in doing this, in order to ensure that, as Representative Delzer says, that there is some consistency between water sales that people are having to pay for and a correlation to the water removed from the aquifer, I'm going to suggest and ask that in a follow-up audit, some work be done to ensure that that type of oversight or examination takes place. Because, you know, when you're selling what it amounts to hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars worth of water, we should at least have some small reassurance that the people who are buying that water are not being taken advantage of. I'm not saying it's up to us to entirely, you know, do everything, but at least we could make some small, take some small action to give some assurance of that. So, I mean, when they report, and even with telemetric metering, there's a possibility, at least in my mind, exists for abuse.
Okay. Any further questions?
Oh, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Kempthorne.
Well, I was just going, and a question. Would there be, because like a lot of them, it looks like are annual reporting. Would it be that a certain amount over a certain amount trigger a monthly, or is that more, you know, if we go to electronic, I guess that could be monitored probably more readily, but, you know, like say 10 million gallons, you know, a month or something like that, or say they exceed, you know, some on their annual report that would trigger that these permit holders, you know, even if they're on a conditional or they have some type of other permit that would not necessarily require it, but that they have a more requirement of more often reporting instead of just an annual?
Yeah, the criteria would be the temporary permits that are a year or less, they report monthly and they report annually, and then the water depots, they report monthly as well. So again, it goes back on the permit type, and then kind of there's some criteria around a volume, but for the water depots, they are required to report monthly.
They're required already.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Thanks.
Okay. Please continue.
So, Mr. Chairman, that really concludes our report. In Appendix A, what we stated here were some relevant state statutes that the Water Commission, the Water Appropriations Division adheres to. And then Appendix B, we stated some detailed results around our testing. So at this point, I'm happy to take any more questions from you or the members of the committee.
Any further questions from the committee at this time? Okay, seeing none, somebody might think of something too before we're done, so, but yeah, all right, who is the next to present?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Bob Shaver, and I'm the director of the Water Appropriations Division. Just to point out, first of all, the auditors that performed this audit acted in a very professional manner and did an excellent job. It was, I think, excellent cooperation between our division, all of our staff, and so we're very pleased with the results of the audit. And as you can see in the audit, we agree with all of the findings. Just to quickly go through those, there were questions with regard to standard operation procedures, SOPs. Some of those things we do have documented on our website, others we don't. And so we think that's a good idea to have these fully documented. I mean, the processes, you know, some of the legal aspects with regard to fines and so forth are well documented in our century code. But in terms of our division, we do think it's a good idea to develop formal standard operating procedures that we can have for all of our functions. So we agree on those. The next issue was looking at some more contemporary technology to get into some electronic reporting versus the manual. And we do recognize, and we've been considering this for a number of years, to allow permit holders to have an electronic format that they can electronically file that annual use report. And it does make their job easier. But keep in mind, as we visited with Charles on this, ultimately we would hope that everybody would have electronic filing capability to send in those electronic filings. But kind of in the interim, until that occurs, we're going to have to support a dual kind of a filing system. We will have to send out hard copies, paper copies, to all the permit holders. Some of those that have the computer capability, they'll be able to file electronically, and they won't have to send in that paper. Others that don't will continue with the paper. The question was earlier, one of the questions was dealing with the accuracy of the data. Just like any form that we all fill out for taxes or anything, mistakes can be made on a form. They can misread their meter, you know, and think it's in acre feet or something, or and they do a wrong conversion factor, something like that. So that's why before it goes into the electronic, our final database, which we want to have as clean as possible, we want to make sure that that data that's going in there is accurate, because that's used by a variety of people, our staff, others. So we want to make sure that, so we do have to, there's no way to not have a step in there where our water use person or people have to look at that data and make sure that it's clean before it goes in. But we do believe that that electronic system for filing is a good idea, and we've been considering that for some time. And I can guarantee that we will be, we will have that electronic filing system up and running, so that by next year the people that will be filing for their 2013 water use will be able to take advantage of that electronic system. That's a guarantee.
We have a question, Representative Maragos. Oh, okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Scarpa.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Shaver, I got to believe these guys selling water for industrial use are probably technologically current. And I would also think that your agency should have the ability to pretty much say that this is going to be done, you know, and we could make provisions to allow for hardship, but I'm not sure that you should be patient. You know, I bet all of them use cell phones. I bet a lot of them use smartphones, and I would submit to you that your form should be pretty easy to put on a smartphone. So why would we not push them to report, you know, electronically and often, in order for your agency to monitor whether or not someone is trending toward a situation that is not very acceptable?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Scarpa, certainly we could push, you know, and we could set up a fine system too. If you don't, you know, send in electronically or get it done, to really push people, I mean, that's a viable alternative, you know.
Chairman, and Mr. Shaver, I'm not suggesting a fine system, but I'm just saying, I'm assuming, and maybe I'm assuming wrong, that there is some cost associated on an annual basis with a water permit. Is that an incorrect assumption?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Scarpa, a cost in terms of our end?
Renewal of lease or you know, permit, or is there not an annual ongoing fee paid by an industrial water user?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Scarpa, no, there isn't.
Okay. All right. Well, maybe the fee needs to increase initially, but I suspect there's a way to do this without making fines be the resolution of it.
Okay. Representative Maragos?
Thank you. Mr. Shaver, are you pretty much concluded your remarks so we can ask some questions here?
Oh, well, I've got a few that might answer some of these questions.
I would prefer you go ahead and finish.
Yes, I made some notes as we went along on some of the questions. So, Mr. Chairman, I'll proceed here. With regard to these, there was a question put forth here with regard to these standard operating procedures, the SOPs, and flexibility. And I think that's a very, and Charles, we agree thoroughly on this. You've got to be careful when you're writing and crafting these standard operating procedures that you don't paint yourself into a corner to where you lose flexibility. And in my 36 years of working with water management, any natural resource, you know, Mother Nature can throw some strange things at you periodically. And as a manager, you have to be able to respond to these anomalous events. And so certainly SOPs can be well written and crafted so that you don't paint yourself into a corner and then remove flexibility. because you do need flexibility when you're managing, especially water. And we've seen that in the last 2 years, going from massive record flooding to drought and everything in between. So we need to be able to respond to those things. So that was one question that was asked. Another one that was asked here was with regard to appeals. What alternatives, if the state engineer takes action against a violator, what can take place? What are the rights of that violator? Any action by the state engineer is appealable. And so they can appeal through what's called an adjudicative hearing. And an adjudicative hearing, then they can go to the Office of Administrative Hearings, which was your question. A hearing officer can be assigned to that. The evidence is dealt with, and the hearing officer then makes a decision. Now, that decision may not be supported by the state engineer. The state engineer does not have to go along with that decision. And then if that's the case, that can be appealed then in a civil court. So there are mechanisms. We've rarely, in the 30-some years I've worked here, to get to even an adjudicative hearing is a very, very rare occurrence. When we have taken action on a permit, it is very well, or a violation, it's been very well defined. And the approach that we're dealing with on these overuse violations, which I want to really emphasize, that we see no widespread, large-scale, unauthorized use out there. That's really important to know. But what we're doing when we find that if it's a use without a permit, which is very rare, and I'm dealing with one right now, once we discover it, we send out what's called a cease and desist order. And then that person that was illegally pumping water, they cease and desist. And we've always had them come in compliance with that order. We've never had anybody, you know, violate that cease and desist. The next step, they could be subject to a criminal penalty and a civil penalty. What we try to do is work through what's called a consent agreement. And we describe these, what could potentially occur through a civil penalty or through a criminal penalty, but then we set up what we think is a just kind of compensation for that unauthorized use. One of the ones that we had one large one this past year that went over about 163 acre feet, and we in the consent agreement developed a fine based on their sales, which was close to $800,000. They paid that fine. In addition, the amount of overuse, which was about 163 acre feet, was subtracted from next year's use under that permit. So they, instead of having about 279 acre feet to sell, they could only sell about 115. So they're better managing that system now. One of the other larger independent providers, because of the scope, the growth of their water sales and number of depots, they actually hired a firm that now has everything automated through CardTroll, and it's computerized such that they, if it's a given depot, they have it computerized so that if it's permitted for 100 acre feet, it shuts off. Yet once they've tabulated sales of 100 acre feet, it's automatically shut down and there's no more sales there. And I think the industry is going those directions simply because it's in their best interest, rather than having the, you know, a clipboard and kind of an honor system with the money that's being involved here. I think they see it's in the best interest to make sure that they're getting proceeds from the exact amount of water that they're selling. So that was that issue. As far as the metering, there was a question here with regard to monthly versus annual use. When we saw, you know, this looming here with the big growth in industrial sales out west, and it's been huge for us, We saw this coming, but it's not to this scope. We knew there was going to be some really significant growth. And so last year, we invoked this monthly reporting, and that's for all water depots that are selling water. We decided you got to send in a monthly report, and then we periodically check meter readings out there for these depots. So the guys that are selling, you know, that have fixed large-scale water depot structures and are selling water, large amounts of water, we're inspecting, reading those meters periodically at least once a year, many of them more than once, sometimes monthly, and then we're requiring all of those to send in monthly water use reports. Now we're asking for an additional FTE, and that was in the audit. The auditors recognize also that another person in water use management is needed. To give you the background on that, it was in 1977 when we first, the division hired a person solely responsible for dealing with water use. And in 77, we had about 1,400 permits that were issued that had to be managed. We're now above about 4,500 or so permits actively that require management, plus now not only those annual use, but now we developed this monthly use, and we've really overwhelmed one person here to do all of this. So we're asking for, in our appropriations budget here, asking for an FTE to help with all of this water use monitoring and gathering. That'll also give us some more field inspection capability also. And then finally, it was the remote telemetry. We recognize that could be an important tool to get real-time data from these water permits, particularly the industrial users. Our real concern at the time was you've got a variety of different meter manufacturers out here. And one of the major concerns was, could we communicate, can we develop an electronic repository that can take all of this electronic information and bring it in and process it and then store it also in our electronic repository. And so that's why we did this pilot study. And we spent a significant amount, over about $10,000 just on hardware alone, not just on time this past year. And we deployed three of these different types. And then our IT person in-house has developed a kind of what you call it, an interface to allow the communication between the meter and our electronic repository. And you'll see in that report that we provided, that pilot study, the results of that. So it is a practical technology. It's not that expensive, and it can be deployed. And we have a variety of recommendations in there, the choices, the way that this system could be developed. So I guess those are the kind of key points, and if there's any questions, I'd certainly field them.
Representative Maragos?
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Staber?
Shaver.
Shaver, thank you. When you talked about the criminal aspect, if there's a finding by your department or the state water commissioner, do you file a complaint then with the state's attorney of the county where the violation took effect? Or do you apply the criminal proceeding yourselves?
Mr. Chairman, and I'm sorry, I don't have...
It's Representative Maragos, don't
worry
about it.
Representative Maragos. Yes, we do request. We had one a few years back where it's referred to the state's attorney. We provide, you know, the basis and the nature of the violation, and then it's left up to the state's attorney for that county to proceed, you know, and their subject on the criminal end, that's a Class A misdemeanor, which could result of up to a year imprisonment and then a $2,000 fine.
May I continue?
Continue.
Yep. And I'm getting a little bit of an education on water here myself and the metering aspect. Just just as a general statement, kind of yes or no, in the process of metering, is it generally pretty easy to run a stem to circumvent the meter, or is that a pretty difficult thing to do out there? Just as a general comment on that.
Mr. Chairman, and Representative...
Maragos.
Okay.
That's okay.
I don't think it's doable. Any meters you can tamper or bypass. I mean, and that's why I think you need periodic ground inspections. There's no substitute for periodically checking these depots and sites out, because nothing is really tamper-proof. You know, in fact, it was interesting at the Western States Water Conference here this spring. It was kind of an interesting anecdote. Was that in Kansas, John? Yeah, it was in Kansas where this fellow testified before a committee and explained how you could, you know, tamper with the meters, and he was a water user, you know, and it was like he painted himself into this corner that, yeah, well, here's how you do it, you know. So, yeah, there's nothing that's really, you know, tamper-free.
One last question, Mr. Chairman. If you would go, do you have the report in front of you?
I do.
Would you go to page 24? It's been a long day, and I must not be processing very well. But in your management response to finding 1.2, you disagree, and then you refer us to 1.2-2. Is that the second comment that you're referring us to in your disagreement? What's the crux of the disagreement, and how do you think that's going to solve the disagreement you had?
Okay, Mr. Chairman, what we're doing here is the date, the auditors offered two options there. One, stick with the February 1st report date, which was number one, or number two, change that date to a more practical. And so what we're saying is we won't stick with the February 1 date, and then we were looking towards a March 15th date to just to allow more flexibility to you know, do the paperwork, et cetera, and respond. So we're disagreeing with sticking with February 1, but we're agreeing that we'll, to the second option, which is we'll push the date back to March 15th.
Well, thank you, because I was a little bit confused as I'm looking at the condition. It says the required submission date is March 7th. And
where?
On that page, if you look under condition, notification letters issued for calendar years 10 and 11, industrial permit holders indicated a required submission date of March 7th, and you're going to March 15th.
Well, this, yeah, and see, but see, that was in violation of the February 1. The Century Code says it must be February 1st, and that's what we've been, because of our workload, you know, we haven't been getting it out, you know, all of these forms out in time, so then we've given them the time, extended it to March 7th. You know, in reality. So we are in violation of Century Code that says you have to have this report in by March or February 1st. So we've been late, you know, in getting this out. So that's why we're saying, you know, well, we don't think February 1st is a workable date anymore that's in Century Code, and we're going to push it out to March 15th, which is, you know, what we've been essentially doing here the last couple of years. Has been the submission date has been March 7th, and that's worked for us. So we're pushing it to like mid-March to just give us that flexibility. So that's why we disagree with the first recommendation.
Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Scarpa.
So just so I'm clear, we're talking about when the report is due to your office from an annual report.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Scarpa, that's correct.
So I'm a little confused, because if an entity doesn't want to get it done by the 1st of February, even though that allows them a month, what additional motivation is there to get it done by the middle of March? I mean, is there more time, but, I mean, obviously they procrastinated not getting it done by the 1st of February. what makes you think they're going to be doing it by the middle of March? I'm just curious.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Scarpel, it's not on their end, it's our end. It's our ability to get all these forms out in time for them to meet that February. We haven't been getting them out in time because of the scope of our, you know, the number of forms that we have to get out, and the other duties and responsibilities of our one water use manager. So we've pushed that it's not the end user, the permit holder, it's our fault. It's that we're not getting those forms out quick enough because our workload is just not allowing us to do so.
So, Mr. Chairman, if I might, so I understand this. So what you're telling us is that you have to mail the forms out to them, and then they fill them out and they send them back. Why aren't the forms available online and they just have a responsibility to fill them out and get them to you?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Scarpel, that's what we agree with. We're going to have this for 2013 calendar year. They will have the ability to file electronically.
I'm not talking about electronically. Why can't they just go on your website right now today and get the form, print it, fill it out, send it to you? I mean, that's not accessible?
Yeah, that's, Mr. Chairman, Representative Scarpel, that's an option.
So, I'm not understanding why...
Every form is unique for every different permit holder. And it's not just a blank, fill-in-the-blank form. It's got location information, all the pertinent information of the permit on the form.
Could we have you come up and introduce yourself and give that information?
I'm John Patch, Assistant Division Director for Water Appropriation Division. I was just mentioning that every form that we send out is unique to that permit. It has all the pertinent information for that particular permit on it. And the law does state that it has to be on a form provided by the state engineer, that they have to send this back by, and that's where that February 1st date comes in. It says on a form provided by the state engineer. So we're providing them that form, but we have to wait till the calendar year finishes, for one thing, because we don't want to provide them the form too early, because they might send it in right away without the full year being completed, if it's a municipal or industrial type use.
So January 1st, those couldn't go out to them January 1st and have them, I mean, they have...
Yes, we are trying to get them out in the first week of January. That's typically what our process has been.
Mr. Chairman.
Okay, go ahead and continue then. Representative Maragos has another question.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay.
I think I understand what you're trying to say now, Mr. Shaver, that the law says they have to be filed by February 1st. You arbitrarily in your division extended it to March 7th in violation of that.
That is correct.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Scarpel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Does the person who has to fill this form out not have all of the information that you need to have available to himself? I mean, what is it that you provide them that's unique other than, I mean, obviously you have a number for that customer, you have a location, you have some information on there. Does that person not know that information?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Scarpel, there's some complicated information that's provided to them in terms of specific well locations, and even people that are familiar with these, the owners of these farmers that have irrigation permits, for instance, they have difficulty filling these things out because they might have multiple permits, multiple well locations, and we want to identify the water use appropriately to each individual permit and point of diversion. And so, yeah, they aren't just a simple process to fill out. They do take a little bit of time. Now, there are those cases where it is very simple, but I would say that's not the norm.
Mr. Chairman, I realize there are probably some provisions with regard to privacy, but I'd really like to see one of these forms. Please. Not today, just, you know.
Senator Lee.
Mr. Chairman, I don't even work with water every day, and I got quite a while ago that the law says they were due February 1st, the office is too busy to get them out, and they moved the date forward. So I think we maybe chastised these folks enough, we got it, you know, and it's, the recommendation is that it's going to be changed. I trust that they will take care of that, and really, I think, you know, maybe we can move on.
Well, I was just kind of thinking why there wasn't a request earlier to extend it. I mean, apparently it's been going on for a while, but I guess that's what the purpose of the audit. Any further questions? Okay, did you have any more to present, or?
No, Mr. Chairman, that was it.
All right. Well, committee, I guess we need to approve the audit.
Chairman,
you have some comments?
Will we approve the audit?
All right. We have a motion and a second. All right, any further discussion? Seeing none, we'll take roll for approving the audit.
I need to look at this.
Chairman Ruby?
Yes.
Representative Anderson? Representative Bo? Representative Hattlestead?
Yes.
Representative Kempinek?
Yes.
Representative Kreitz?
Yes.
Representative Margos?
Yes.
Representative Mock? Representative Munson?
Yes.
Representative Pollard?
Aye.
Representative Scarpo?
Yes.
Senator Wanzek?
Yes.
Senator Heckman?
Yes.
Senator Klein?
Aye.
Senator Lee?
Aye.
All right, that motion carried. Any further directives, Senator Lee?
Mr. Chairman, I just have a question. How much did this performance audit cost?
Was the original $100,000?
Mr. Chairman, yes, that's what the committee approved, it was, back in June, was $100,000 for this. We did come back and seek, and they're going to do some additional work in the permitting area, and that was $50,000 that you approved.
Thank you.
All right.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Scarpo?
Just a comment. It was stated that a violator could adjudicate his case, and I'm really curious how any administrative law judge can make a ruling when one of the audited recommendations in here was for them to develop formal policies. Now, if you don't have formal policies, how can anybody evaluate whether or not the policy's been violated? You know, I'm still a little puzzled, but I'm sure it'll all get worked out.
All right, do we have a motion to adjourn? Motion, and do we have a second?
Second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay? We're done.